You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Your Family Matters is a talk radio program with expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. Host Cindy Morin is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. And now, here is your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. I am your host, Cindy Morin, and I'm a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, and here today with me is Sharon Numero from Alberta Divorce Finances. So thank you, Sharon, for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Today we're going to be talking about divorce and separation and tax time, since tax time is coming up very quickly. And Sharon, given the fact that a lot of what you do is tax advice in your practice, we thought you'd be the perfect person to come in today and tell us, what does a newly separated client have to keep in mind first and foremost when preparing their tax return?
So first and foremost, tax returns are complicated even when people think they're simple. But when you separate, the first time you do your tax return, it's even more complicated than usual. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things is understanding when Revenue Canada thinks you're separated versus family law thinks you're separated. So the difference being, as you would tell clients, in family law, you can be separated, living in the same home, having separated responsibilities, etc. But Revenue Canada says you're not separated until you're physically living separate and apart for a continuous period of 90 days or more. So that's really critical, because if you file as separated, it kicks in a bunch of family benefits and other funds that Revenue Canada starts to send you, and then eventually they will discover that, if it is the case, that you're in fact not separated, living in the same home, and so it can cause a lot of stress, problems, clawing back of funds from CRA. So it's really, really important, and I spend a lot of time talking to lawyers, talking to accountants about that difference, to really understand that it is very different the first time you do your tax return.
Well, I think that's a good point to make, because what people often confuse, even with family law, is that just because the definitions under the different pieces of family law legislation say one thing, the Income Tax Act that is developed by Canadian Revenue Agency is completely different, and they have their own set of rules and definitions about what defines whether somebody's married, whether somebody's common law, etc. So sometimes I'll even have clients come in and see me, and they'll say, well, I have a common law spouse. We've been together for a year. And I'm like, okay, so according to Revenue Canada, yes, that would be a common law spouse. But according to family law matters, that does not equate to being a common law spouse. And you don't actually have rights that start to accrue after a year of being quote-unquote common law. So I think it's important for people to understand and differentiate that different laws have different definitions and different meanings. And so, yes, you're correct. In family law, in a family law forum, you're considered living separate and apart as defined by when you and your spouse decide this is the day that we've decided to no longer be together as a couple, and you can still physically live under the same house, but live separate and apart according to family law. But as you say, Revenue Canada has a totally different interpretation, and that is living in separate homes for 90 days or more. So,
and I think the problem is further compounded because people come to see their family law lawyer to get legal advice, but they're having conversations using that language, and you know, I spend a lot of time talking to family lawyers so that they have that basic understanding that they can, you know, share with clients. But then clients go to get their tax returns prepared, whether they're seeing an accountant or, you know, they're going to a local coroner to have it done. And tax professionals know very little about family law. So there's confusion on both sides. And in the middle, you have the client who's already dealing with the worst time in their life, makes it even more stressful because then they start to get letters from CRA because they've made quite innocent mistakes.
And this is exactly why I'm always telling clients, you need to go talk to Sharon and double check all of your tax stuff, because although family lawyers, should know a lot of this stuff and should be communicating different processes and explaining this stuff to clients, not all family lawyers are up on the tax issues. And even myself, who is pretty savvy with the tax issues, I would still defer to you for any, irregular tax information.
And what people don't understand is, lawyers is sort of more obvious that they wouldn't have that information. But when they go to see tax professionals or their accountant, a lot of them don't know the intricacies of returns for separating and divorcing clients. If you only have one or two clients that are going through separation and divorce, you're not spending the time to develop expertise. And so quite often people ask questions and they're given, the best answer is always, if you don't know, I'll get you the information. But so, quite often the answer is the incorrect answer. Yeah. And so that's something people really don't understand, that a lot, because I tour lecturing to tax professionals, because a lot of them don't know all of the details because it's so complicated. And so unfortunately, just like you see a lawyer to get the best legal advice, you go see a tax expert to get the best tax advice. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's the wrong advice, and people don't realize that really returns for separating and divorcing taxpayers have become so complicated that not everybody knows everything about it.
I think that's where the saying came up, that the left hand isn't talking to the right hand. It's got to be between tax professionals and lawyers. I'm sure that's where it came from. But that's why we have you, Sharon. So what are some of the things that a separated client can claim that perhaps they couldn't when they were married?
So the biggest issue, mostly because it's worth pretty close to the most amount of money, and money talks, especially when you're going through divorce, is when you are married, you have the opportunity to claim a non-working or a very low income earning spouse called the spouse credit. But when you're a single parent, you obviously don't have that opportunity. You're not residing in what Canada Revenue Agency calls a conjugal relationship with another adult. So they give you the opportunity to claim a dependent. For most divorced taxpayers, that means a child, and a child that doesn't work. Or let's face it, most of them aren't working a lot. And even the ones a bit older, getting towards 18, who are working, those that aren't earning enough because the credit is worth quite a lot. So it's a credit available to single parents worth quite a bit of money that is available whether you're widowed, divorced, separated, single for some other reason, that isn't available to married couples or common law couples.
And how much is that claim worth to a client?
So in 2014, so it changes a little bit every year. In 2014, it was worth just under $3,500. Mm. So that's a lot of money because, of course, if you have a child who, you can claim it up to and including their 18th year. That's a lot of years to get that money, especially when you divorce when your children are a bit younger.
Right. And what are some of the other items that clients can apply on their income tax forms when they're going through separation and divorce?
Just one other thing. Do you mind if I back up?
No,
that's
ahead,
okay. So with the amount for eligible dependent that these single parents can claim, not every single parent can claim it. So that's where it gets complicated, right? And everybody thinks that they're a single parent, they can claim it. You have to be a single parent, either in a primary custody arrangement or shared parenting. So if you are the parent who sees your children, the typical every other weekend, one night during the week, or less than 40% of the time, you cannot claim the amount for eligible dependent because almost always that person is always paying child support. Revenue Canada's rule is you're paying child support, no dice on the claim. The exception to that and where everybody nowadays is getting into trouble, where lawyers are seeking my help to get the right wording in agreements, where clients are coming with their denial letters from Revenue Canada, is in those shared arrangements.
Right.
Right?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. So the shared arrangements, both parents, as most people know, are paying child support. Perhaps you're telling them there's this differential called offset, but in 2007, Revenue Canada made a change to the Income Tax Act that said, hey, if both parents are paying child support, but they can agree on who's going to claim which child, assuming there's two or more, then we will allow them to claim the amount for eligible dependent, assuming they're a single parent, not remarried or common law. The problem is Revenue Canada is very picky. Whether it's fair or not fair, reasonable, not reasonable, we could probably discuss. But the bottom line is if you don't have the right wording, you will get denied. And it's a bigger problem if you have a court order versus a written agreement.
So my understanding is the way that it should be worded, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that one parent should say, I am paying X amount of dollars for
right.
child support. And then the other parent says, I am paying X amount of dollars for child support on a 50-50 regime, rather than just X amount will be paid as an offset to this one parent. It, you've got to show what each party is paying and just break it down that one further step
Correct.
In order for Revenue Canada to accept that.
Correct. And then doing what lawyers used to do, which was, therefore, higher income earner pays offset child support. You can't say that anymore. They liked it, now they don't like it. So it literally has to say what you've just said. And in addition, higher income earner, for convenience, put it in big capital letters, convenience only will pay to the other the difference in their monthly support obligations, for convenience only.
So to use actual numbers, so because it's hard to
sure.
kind of explain
yeah.
this over
yeah.
over the radio, if you and I are a married couple, and
that would be interesting.
I was going to say, I don't know why you wouldn't want to be married to me because I'm so darn cute. It's unfortunate that everybody can't see me on the radio, but if you and I were married
right.
and we had two children and we were doing shared parenting where I had 1 week with the children and then you had 1 week with the children and we bounced them back and forth.
Right.
And I earned more money because I'm obviously more successful, right?
Absolutely.
And I had to pay you child support of $800 a month.
Right.
But then because it's a 50-50 shared parenting regime, you also have to pay me, $500 a month.
Right.
Based on your income. The offset of that would be me, the higher income earner, paying you $300 a month.
Correct.
But instead of the order saying, you know, Cindy will pay to Sharon $300 a month in offset support in a shared parenting regime, it's going to say Cindy will pay to Sharon $800 a month for child support. Sharon will pay to Cindy $500 a month for child support for convenience purposes only.
Correct.
The money that shall be exchanged is $300 a month from Cindy to Sharon.
Rather than exchanging checks.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to be married to you anymore.
I was going to say, we're not exploring that further, right?
Actually, we would have to be divorced. We couldn't even be married in that situation. I said if we were married and had children. There you go.
Oh, look at you.
We'd have to be married and divorced.
Correct.
So there we go.
Yes.
I didn't want to stay with you that long anyway.
No.
Getting back to what we were talking about before, in addition to the eligible
yeah.
dependent, actually, I'm going to back up now, my turn to back up. What happens if there's a shared parenting regime, 50-50, but we only have one child? Then only one of us gets to claim the eligible dependent?
Correct. And similarly, if there are more than two children, you can only claim one child. Because think of it as it's in lieu of a spouse claim.
Right.
When that spouse has no income.
So when only one child is being claimed by one or the other party,
right.
Who should claim it?
You want to make matters easy, have the lower income earner claim it, won't have a problem, won't get denied. You'll still get a letter, but you're not going to get denied. So that's always my default is won't have a problem. And then it's a flat amount every year. Like you get a certain amount to claim. It's a certain percentage. So any tax professional can say, this is how much it's worth in your pocket. And I always say, give the other person half. Now, keep in mind, the lower income earning parent in that arrangement has to have enough income that they would otherwise owe tax, or they're working for a company that withheld enough tax so that you have that $3,500 to get back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I think you see in some scenarios,
correct,
it might be better off to give it to the higher income earner to bring their taxes
right
down.
So as long as you write it just as you just explained it, and you've said you've both agreed, then yes, in theory, there shouldn't be a problem. Some people, where they are both, where it's applicable, decide to alternate every year. And so I always say, if you want to increase the numbers of letters you're getting from Revenue Canada, alternate every year. You make it more complicated. So, you know, keep it simple. Stupid applies with Revenue Canada. They'll bother you less, in theory.
In theory. What are some other things that that individuals can claim when they're going through divorce?
So some of the things that divorcing taxpayers can claim are much the same as married couples. The like the fitness credit, the arts credit, tuition for post-secondary education, child care, you know, medical expenses, things that are available to people when they're also together. The difference is now you're going to enter into discussions with lawyers talking about Section 7 extraordinary expenses, what's your pro rata share of the expense that you have to pay. So my caution on this one is, number one, somebody or both of you are going to be claiming things on your tax return and getting money back in your pocket. So when you're doing this sharing of the expense, make sure you're sharing it on an after-tax basis, right? So let's pretend, you know, we're still divorced and, you know, we had one of our kids in hockey and hockey was $1,000, right? That's the maximum limit for the fitness credit. And we did 50-50 sharing. We each paid $500, but, you know, you were always working. So I took him to hockey and so I got the receipt. Neither of us were really aware, so I just handed it into my tax professional. I gave him the $1,000 receipt. I got $150 back in my pocket. So now I paid $500 less the $150 I just got back, and you paid $500.
This is why I divorced her in the first place. She's so greedy.
Just clever. So now sometimes, and I'll say most of the time, people really aren't aware what things are worth, what they're claiming. They're throwing all the receipts at the tax professional and out comes some number that's hopefully a refund in most people's world. So what I like to educate people on is you need to be aware that in the fitness credit, it's not the best example because it's not a lot of money. But things like, you start talking about things like childcare,
tuition.
Yeah, you know, there's quite a bit of money involved. And so you need to be claiming things appropriately within CRA limits. And I like to do tax returns, which most tax professionals don't, for both parties in a separated couple, because then we can all work together.
Yeah, that
but
makes sense.
If you can't, just be aware that there is money available and, you know, hopefully nobody's, you know, running a little scam on the side and is greedy, like you said I was. And hopefully everybody's working together to make sure it's done fairly.
Well, another thing that I know that can be deducted that a lot of people aren't aware of is that their legal fees for child support and spousal support, if you had to make a claim to receive that, you can actually take those legal fees and apply that. One of the things that we do at our firm at Resolve Legal Group is every year come tax time, we automatically generate those letters for clients of ours who have had to deal with child support or spousal support. And so I know that that's not a typical practice with a lot of firms. So it's important for the listener to know that if you have a family lawyer and you're dealing with child support or spousal support in your family matters, you should be asking your lawyer to give you a letter come tax time, because you can write off those legal fees related
Correct.
To support. Now, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that that only applies to people who are dealing with or paying legal fees to get support.
To receive it, yeah.
It does not work if you're paying legal fees to pay support, which in my humble opinion is kind of unfair because the payers sometimes have to bring a claim to get things adjusted and they should be able to deduct those. But, you know, I don't work for Revenue Canada, so.
Correct. None of us do.
Yeah.
But it would be great if we did because they have a lot of power. The reason that is because legal fees, not only in respect of trying to increase, establish, recover, child support or spousal support, but in respect of being dismissed from a job, a lot of those kind of things. And what Revenue Canada says is where you have to pay legal fees as it relates to a source of income. So in other words, for the receiver, child support and spousal support are sources of income. So where it relates to a source of your income, you can claim those legal fees as a deduction. Why the payer can't is because Revenue Canada views spousal support and child support as a living expense of the payer. And legal fees and related to living expenses are not claimable.
Right.
I don't disagree with you. Sometimes the payer has legal fees through no fault of their own. Sometimes because the receiver is just, trying to increase it for no good reason, et cetera. And, you have to defend yourself. There have been the odd case where payers have proven that it is now affecting their source of income. But it's pretty impossible and realistically just the receiver 99% of the time is the one entitled. And it is if you have a decent amount of income, you get whatever tax bracket you're in, you get that percent of your legal fees back. It's a very, very worthwhile claim.
Absolutely.
And I love that you guys do it at Resolve. But like you said, most lawyers don't automatically do that, though I'm trying to encourage them to. So I always tell clients in advance of getting your return done, because it can take weeks to get that letter, try and remember to ask your lawyer. And really, Revenue Canada only requires a letter that says, so-and-so spent this amount on legal fees in the year to do whatever they were doing with child support or spousal support, and this percent relates to those issues. That's really 99% of the time all they require.
Yeah, I think a reason why a lot of lawyers don't is it is a bit of an accounting nightmare.
Totally.
Our accounting software isn't set up to kind of differentiate what is related to child support. So it is a great deal of work around tax time for us, but we think that, the clients deserve to have
and
that.
Sometimes lawyers haven't seen clients in quite some time.
Yeah.
So unless your system is going to trigger it, which it's not, I just tell clients just to go and ask. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to also point out just kind of the obvious to us that the listener may not know as being so obvious, and that is when you're paying child support, there is no tax deduction to the payer who's paying child support, but spousal support is a tax deduction. So sometimes working with a tax specialist like yourself, you can maximize the amount of money in both parties' genes at the end of the day if you set up your separation agreement or orders in a way that benefits the family as a whole. And that's why looking at it holistically with both parties, incomes and taxes involved, is to the benefit of everybody.
Right. And the most important thing to remember with spousal support is that the moment you make a claim for a spousal support deduction, so for the payer, you're going to get a letter to prove by way of an agreement or court order that you were obligated to make these payments, and then you will also require something from the receiver saying that I did in fact get this money. The most important thing to remember is that in order to claim a spousal support deduction for a particular calendar year, you absolutely have to have some sort of agreement. It can be an interim agreement signed by December 31st of the following calendar year. So for example, if you wanted to go back and make a claim for 2014, you have to have an agreement or court order by December 31st of 2015,
yeah,
or you are out of luck. And as you say, there is sometimes a lot of money on the table, and even worthwhile, as you said, to work together, pay the receiver's taxes for those years while you're negotiating and working together, and then getting the larger refund because the payer's in a higher bracket, sharing, those funds or paying the extra legal fees. I'm just joking.
Yeah.
But working together for the benefit of everyone, more money available for the kids, etc.
Better to pay it to the family,
correct,
in some way than the government. If it's, right, if it's a legitimate thing that you can write off and have more money in your jeans for your kids, why not? And I think, you know, if we have any junior lawyers listening, it's really important for you to diarize your files so that you don't miss out on the benefit of giving your clients the opportunity to make those claims, because sometimes family files, for whatever reason, can drag on much longer than we've anticipated. So making sure that you've got the deadline of the end of the calendar year in place, so that you can make some retroactive tax adjustments, is really, really crucial. Now, I just noticed I'm cognizant of time and we're running out of time, which is unfortunate because we've got so much more to talk about. But very quickly, what about benefits and how they apply to separation and divorce? Can everyone claim a child tax benefit and universal child care benefit?
So benefits are one of those things, whereas a lot of married couples together have too much income and wouldn't qualify. But now when you're separated, Revenue Canada views you as single. They base it on your previous year's income alone. And so a lot of, especially lower income earners in the couple, will now qualify for benefits. So Canada Child Tax Benefit, that monthly income assistance that sometimes you're receiving, Revenue Canada doesn't let you say, mom can have all the money, that you don't get to decide. In fact, it doesn't even need to be really in your agreement, because Revenue Canada says both parties are entitled to apply for benefits. Okay. If you're in a primary parenting regime and you're the primary parent and you qualify, you will get full benefits. If you are in a shared arrangement and you qualify, you will get that same primary benefit cut in half, cut by 50%. So in other words, in a lot of couples, higher income earner, often the dads, won't qualify or will qualify for very little, and mom will qualify for quite a bit. But there is no option to say, give mom the full benefit in that shared arrangement. That is not how it works. Yeah. So the universal child care benefit, which is that new thing that we're getting for kids 6 to 17, a big $60 a month, that you can each receive for 6 months. But I always say to people, just split the money or put it in an account for an RESP.
Yeah.
So that's how those work. And when you're separated for those 90 days, file a marital status change form, and it will trigger the start of receipts if you qualify for the child tax benefit.
Yeah, it's funny to me how many clients actually argue over some of these benefits, and sometimes they'll argue over stuff that they don't even qualify to receive. And again, another good reason why we send them to you, so that they can do their tax stuff together, to see that sometimes you're really fighting over nothing or fighting over $60 and isn't worth it.
And why are you fighting with the professionals who, for the most part, don't have the expertise in that area, right? You spend a half an hour or an hour with someone in the know. You get the language to put in the agreements, and you can talk about the more important issues with your lawyers.
Great. So in closing, do you have any final thoughts that you can share with us now that tax season is upon us?
Now that tax season is upon us, first and foremost, don't do your own tax return. I still can't figure out, and so many people do their own tax returns. And you know, when you're married, it's a little bit easier, but when you separate, people make so many mistakes. I think Revenue Canada has on their website how many millions of dollars people actually miss, never mind mistakes, miss doing their own returns. And secondly, yeah, when you're going to file your first return as a separated taxpayer, it's worth it to spend an hour or half an hour getting some advice so that you can then worry about the legal stuff with the lawyers.
And if people want to get a hold of you to help them with that?
They can go to my website, AlbertaDivorceFinances.com. They can email me. Email's on my website, Sharon@AlbertaDivorceFinances.com. And, you know, anywhere, any time of year, I'm happy to talk about taxes. I'm actually always happy to talk about taxes. But that's how you can get a hold of me, 403-703-7176.
Perfect. Well, I want to thank you very much for being a part of our show today. If you want to find out more about our guest or our firm Resolve Legal Group, please visit our website at www.resolvelegalgroup.com or by calling us at 1-866-RESOLVE.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.